Hello everyone, welcome to today's webinar. My name is Kayla Jenkins and I'm the Communications Assistant at the Society for Nutrition Education and Behavior. I'm glad you all could join us for our presentation today. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you will see a Handouts tab, and here is where you will find the slides for today. Feel free to download those and take notes as you follow along with today's presentation. We will take questions at the end of the webinar, so please type your questions into the question box at any time throughout the presentation so that we can moderate them to our presenters. When the webinar ends, you'll be prompted to complete a short survey, and we do appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future webinars. And lastly, watch for a follow-up email to be sent by the end of the day on Thursday that will include a link to the recording for this session, the slide handout, and the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. So our moderator today is Liz Sanders. She's with the IFIX Foundation and is a representative of the SNEB Communications Division.
Thanks, Kayla. And now I'm going to introduce our presenters. Austin Childers holds a BA in Human Geography with concentrations in Agro-Food Systems, Politics, and Urban Development, and a new media certificate from the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia. In his current position, Childers coordinates statewide social marketing nutrition education interventions to promote healthy eating and physically active behaviors of low-income Georgians from the University of Georgia SNAP-Ed, conducts social marketing research while utilizing emerging and traditional methods of communication to create and distribute nutrition education methods, and three, provides technical marketing assistance to the University of Georgia SNAP-Ed team of nutrition and nutrition education professionals. Dr. Lee holds a doctoral degree in community nutrition from Cornell University and received additional training in geriatrics and epidemiology at the University of Pittsburgh and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Dr. Lee has training and background in community nutrition, epidemiology, and aging, with specific expertise in food security research, conducting evaluation studies on food nutrition assistance programs, community-based nutrition interventions, and policy addressing nutrition-related health disparities in low-income populations. Ms. Cacho Rivera holds a master's degree in public health and a bachelor's of science in community health education. Ms. Cacho Rivera's professional background includes community health education and outreach, chronic disease prevention education, and working with diverse audiences. Ms. Cacho Rivera has extensively contributed to research projects related to health, nutrition, wellness with diverse and underserved populations. As the University of North Georgia's SNAP-Ed project coordinator, she is responsible to collaborate with the principal investigator to provide guidance to both state staff and county-based extension staff for the design, implementation, and evaluation of the program's direct nutrition education, social marketing, and e-learning interventions. I should also mention that this webinar was brought to you in collaboration with the Association of SNAP Nutrition Education Administrators. With that, I'm going to turn it over to the presenters to begin the presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Eva Cacho Rivera, and it's my pleasure to bring greetings from the University of Georgia and the UGA SNAP-Ed program. We are very excited about you're joining us for this afternoon presentation. The learning objectives for this afternoon, we hope that by the end of this webinar, you as a participant will gain understanding on how the University of Georgia SNAP-Ed social marketing uses geo-targeting options for promoted content on Facebook and Google AdWords. Also, how geotargeting helps to achieve 100% SNAP-Ed eligibility in geotargeted online audiences. And we will also would like to share a basic knowledge on how to apply similar practices to other nutrition education programs targeted to low-income audiences. This is going to be an account of how we do things at UGA SNAP-Ed. Some of this information might be familiar to some, or a good refresher to others. The ultimate goal is to share skills that might be helpful to other nutrition educators and even those who may contract out this kind of work at the present time. Just as a review, the U.S. Department of Agriculture Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program Education provides grants to states across the nation to implement nutrition education and obesity prevention programs. These interventions have the goal to improve the likelihood that people eligible for SNAP will make healthy choices within a limited budget and choose active lifestyles consistent with the current dietary guidelines for Americans and MyPlate resources. The University of Georgia is one of our four implementing agencies in our state. And as an implementing agency, is it crucial that we assure our funders and state agency that we are reaching out to SNAP eligible individuals as presented in the program's guidance. As you see on the slide, the SNAP eligibility is defined as low-income individuals who receive SNAP benefits or other means-tested federal assistance programs, and individuals residing in communities with a significant low-income population. On a regular basis, we communicate with our funders and state agency to have the agencies that we work with, the audiences that we want to reach to, and the locations that we would like to promote our programs approved before we start any programming or interventions. At the present slide, we will have an explanation of the eligibility criteria that we carefully follow. The first criteria is that we serve individuals who live in households with an income at or below the 185% of the federal poverty level, or who participate in other federally funded programs such as SNAP, WIC, TANF, or free or reduced school lunch. We also partner with agencies located in qualifying zip codes, areas, or communities where 50% or more of the people that live in the area have gross incomes at or below the 185% of the federal poverty level. At the bottom of the slide, you will see an example of the form that we submit to the state prior to starting any programming. Our geographic information system team assists us in determining each site criteria for justification for the approval process. Then this list is reviewed by our state SNAP coordinator who provides the appropriate approvals so we can go ahead and serve our communities. On the next slide, we will have an overview of our program, and I will hand the control of the presentation at this time to Dr. Lee.
Hi, this is Jongsun Lee. I'm going to share an overview of the UGA SNAP Ed program, and especially our social marketing intervention to provide a context of today's webinar, why and how we use geo-targeting techniques. And UGA SNAP Ed is a relatively new program, reestablished since 2013, and intends to reach and impact SNAP Ed eligible Georgians across the state. And following the new direction of the SNAP Ed grant under the Health Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, UGA SNAP Ed has been developing and implementing evidence-based, culturally tailored, multi-level nutrition education and obesity prevention interventions targeted to unique needs of SNAP Ed eligible Georgians. And UGA SNAP Ed is based on the collective capacity of UGA interdisciplinary outreach and research, augmented infrastructure and network of the UGA Cooperative Extension, and collaboration with diverse stakeholders and communities across the state. And we have been particularly interested in establishing best practice dissemination implementation models to reach and serve low-income Georgians in need. And we have been employing systematic evaluation using rigorous evaluation methods, the SNAP Ed evaluation framework, and innovative technology, including GIS and social media geo-targeting tools, which is the focus of our webinar today. And a UGA SNAP Ed program consists of four types of interventions, including food talk. This is direct face-to-face nutrition education using a paraprofessional peer educator model in 8 counties. And Food eTalk is an innovative, smartphone-friendly online e-learning nutrition education program available in all Georgia counties. and social marketing food truck intervention through newsletters, social media, and F&B campaign in the selective Georgia counties, and Healthy Child Care Georgia, which is early childhood obesity intervention, combining both policy systems and environmental change approach and diet nutrition education into selected urban counties. We started our programming by adopting the Food Talk program, which was originally validated for the low-income Georgians and has been used successfully by the UGA FNET program. Then we have developed and tested two new culturally tailored curricula. One is the Food Talk Better You, a series of four lessons focusing on healthy weight management practices. And the other is Food Talk Farmers Market, consists of eight standalone lessons offered at both mobile and stationary farmers market. And all these curricula have served as a basis for the classroom, e-learning, and social marketing programs offered across the state of Georgia. Let me share with you more about our social marketing intervention development process. From the beginning of the UGA SNAPBED programming, we had specific interest in developing an evidence-based social marketing intervention because of its high potential to deliver nutrition education and obesity prevention messages targeted to large, low-income populations quickly at relatively low cost. Our initial development efforts focus on comprehensive need assessments to better understand unique needs of SNAPED eligible other Georgians in terms of content, format, and communication channels for statewide social marketing intervention. And we have conducted 12 focus group interviews with a convenient sample of key SNAPED stakeholders, including corporate extension agents and SNAPED eligible Georgians recruited from a range of rural and urban counties across the state. And the findings suggest that social marketing is a feasible SNAPED intervention option for us. However, we need to carefully consider individual and community level barriers reflecting unique social, economic, and geographic conditions and need to adopt appropriate segmentation strategies. We also found that social media, such as Facebook, can't be used as an effective means of engaging SNAPED eligible individuals, as most of our study sample reported to have a social media membership and search health and nutrition information through social media. So these findings informed the developments of the UGA SNAPED social marketing intervention, and we have been actively developing, delivering culturally appropriate segmented messages using print and online media. During the fiscal year 2017, we have piloted, tested a new fruit and vegetable campaign. We adopted Partnership for a Healthier America's F&B campaign materials and used billboards, radio ads, and online videos and four intervention and two control counties. And we have been also looking for opportunities for future point of purchase interventions. So in our social marketing intervention design and implementation, we have been carefully using an innovative tool called the geotargeting. So Austin will provide more details on why and how we use this tool.
Thank you for that introduction, Dr. Lee and Etta, for the introduction earlier. So why do we geotarget? Geotargeting is one of the easiest ways to ensure 100% SNAPED eligibility of large audiences. Reaching 100% eligible populations is important in SNAPED due to funding and reporting requirements. So this is a way, especially online, to ensure that you are eligible in your reports and in your planning. So we've talked a little bit about our social marketing program and how campaigns utilize geotargeting, but what does that mean exactly? So this is kind of my own definition you see here that summarizes a lot of different activities that are very similar in practice. You'll sometimes, if you look into this yourself, you'll sometimes hear the term geotargeting referred to as location targeting or geofencing or even geomarketing as well. Here you can see some examples of how geotargeting plays out in real life. Some of these examples may feel more obvious or natural than others. Billboards are highly targeted to specific locations by their nature because they can only reach people who are physically close enough to see them. It's a natural part of the site selection process when you buy inventory, because billboards are permanently affixed to a particular location, and that's just what you purchase. Radio is a little bit broader method, but it's still geofenced to listeners in a broadcast range. The radio waves can only go so far. Geotargeting is considered when you're buying inventory around a station. Make sure your locations are covered. But online, it's a little bit different, because content can be accessed virtually anywhere by anyone. So geotargeting must be specified intentionally. Geotargeting online can focus reach to SnapEd eligible viewers based on a combination of self-reported location information, GPS and IP address data of devices accessing the content or being served the ads. So, and before I go on, I'd just like to mention, I always say this about online ads and their advantages with billboards and radio, is that we live in a time now where a lot more people are looking down at their phones than they're looking up and around at other things like billboards and radio. So the value of this and the importance of geotargeting online only continues to grow. So this map here shows many of SnapEd eligible geographies in Georgia based on various methods of community eligibility assessment as outlined in the Federal Fiscal Year 18 SnapEd guidance. The data and shapefiles you see here were provided by a co-PI on our project, Jerry Shannon, and his grad student, Yang Zhijin Wei. In addition to the types listed, this one listed there on the left about the zip codes and the census tract and the 1 mile radii. This map also includes strike force locations, and those eligible sites are addresses like WIC clinics or retailers that redeem $50,000 or more in SNAP benefits. This is a real life example of how we use geotargeting with our FNV pilot intervention in Federal Fiscal Year 17. Some of you may be familiar with the FNV campaign put out by the Partnership for Healthier America. The campaign was designed to assess diverse and different population types from across the state. It was also designed to utilize different mediums to reach our intended audience. We targeted campaign activities to low-income areas in SnapEd eligible zips near produce retailers, so eligible produce retailers. And if you look at this map, you can see how ranges of radio from the overlays are geo-targeted or geo-fenced, and it's easy to understand how billboards only reach the people that see them, but online ads can go anywhere. And that's why we use geo-targeting to reach the same real-world communities as the billboard and radio ads reach, but to reach them online. We evaluated this campaign also with what are called retargeted surveys online. So we targeted surveys back to people who had seen the videos that we promoted to them, or in the case of controls, just targeted to people in those counties. We conducted intercept surveys at SnapEd eligible produce retailers near the billboards, and we direct mailed surveys, business reply mail, to residents within the target zip codes living near to billboards or en route from billboards to produce retailers. And we did all of this with a pretty modest budget. The highly focused segmentation nature of this and geotargeting allows us to maximize our reach and evaluation efforts at minimal cost. So there are many platforms online that permit geotargeting, but for the sake of time today, we'll just focus on these two popular platforms, Facebook and Google. There are, you can see a bunch of different example options here when you conduct your geotargeting. On Facebook, there are four options for reaching people in a location. You can reach everyone in this location, which is the default. People who live in the location, people who recently were in the location, or people traveling to the location. For the most part, you know, we would ever target people who live in a location, or maybe everyone in a location. People who live in a location would probably be most appropriate for eligible zip codes, whereas things like WIC clinics, if you're using the 1 mile radii method, WIC clinics may not be where people live. And, you know, they see people come in from all over. So everyone in this location may be a more appropriate option for you in such a scenario. And then Google there, you can see, has a little bit fewer options. People in your targeted location, people searching for or who show interest in your targeted location, or a combination of the two. The default on Google is the combination of the two, which you might want to change if you run your own campaign so that you don't serve ads to people who are just searching for your state but may not live in your state or wherever your location, your target location is. We consider states a lot here because we are UGA SNAPED for Georgia. You can also exclude locations based on this criteria. For example, just to make our promotions budget go a little bit further, we might exclude universities from our targeting because students are almost always in an eligible population. So some pros and cons here. For Facebook, the interface is simpler due to Facebook being what's known as a siloed website. They control everything in terms of content types, formats, distribution, and placement. The data is rich because users self-report a lot of things like likes, what they're interested in. They check into locations. Facebook can analyze behaviors and communication content, so they know how to target things very well. And other platforms like Snapchat or what have you may be trending, but Facebook has consistently, since its inception, been the most popular and highest used social media platform or app for just about every market segment, and still represents a great place to reach people and to use rich targeting data. Google is very powerful. AdWords is the name of Google's advertising platform. Not a lot of people know about it because it's really just designed for advertisers, webmasters and things like that. It's very powerful. It can be a bit more intimidating to use than Facebook's Ads Manager at first. Facebook and Google represent combined the vast majority of online advertising. They're pretty much it. But Facebook mostly advertises within its platforms while Google serves much of the web. So Google, even if you visit a website that's not Google or you search outside of Google, chances are that the advertisements you see on that website are managed through Google. You have to log in to use Facebook, so tracking and targeting is very easy for the platform. Because Google or Facebook knows a lot about the individual. Google gets this information too. It's just not as obvious how they get this information, but they get it through Chrome. If you're logged into it, Gmail, logged in searches, but it also makes a lot more use of cookies and statistical methods on websites than it than Facebook has to. So now that we've covered what geotargeting is and some options to use, we're going to get into a little bit of how we did it. A quick note, this presentation was originally conceived of as a Skillshare for ASNA members in the Social Marketing Committee in particular. So this next part is kind of a how-to presentation, and it gets pretty technical as I run through some of the processes step by step. So if feel free to follow along at your desk if you're using Facebook right now or you're managing ads right now and you want to know how to add this stuff. Or you can just follow these steps later on, you know, from the slides. But we're just going to run through a couple of hypothetical examples here today. So I received some feedback, rather, when sharing this presentation with the ASNA Social Marketing Subcommittee that sample executions might be helpful to look at. So this is a slide to share an example of what ads look like on Facebook, so we know what we're talking about. These are screen captures from a recent campaign of FNV videos, as we mentioned before. And as you can see, it mostly renders the same across different types of platforms, you know, Instagram feed, instant articles, mobile news feed, etc. Whereas with Google, you know, things can look a little bit different based on whether or not they're showing up an app or on a website, what have you. We tested two different cover photos when we ran this campaign to gauge response, see if there's any difference in response rates. And the videos that had fruit and vegetables as the cover photo actually had a little bit better response rate, but the engagement statistics overall were virtually identical for both promotion sets. So Facebook was happier to show the fruits and vegetables one. People must have reacted a little bit better to it initially, but overall, there wasn't any real major difference. So once you have the content you want to promote, and by content I mean videos, images, or other posts, you'll want to build your target audience to use in your promotion. This is how you will geo-target your audience. For the purposes of this demonstration, I am going to go through manage ads, which you see highlighted there on your screen in yellow, option rather than starting from scratch and to create ads. So from your top right, if you're logged in, if you want to follow along, drop down like underneath your settings for your page and navigate to manage ads. This is also called the power editor for people that have been around and doing this for a while. So that might sound familiar. So once you click through to your power editor, this is what you're looking at. Your frequently used features will appear. Everyone should be seeing something a little different. So if you don't see audiences, expand your all tools and find audiences. And this is a little bit counterintuitive here. We're going to create what's called a saved audience. It's really weird to have the first step be to click something called saved because you would think it's something you've already made. But you're actually creating something new there with a saved audience. And that's how you can define the characteristics that you want to target with your promotions. So this is a little glimpse at some of the audiences we've made at UGA SnapEd. And if you look on the right, if you're also kind of browsing the image at home, you'll see most are in your office, you'll see most of them are saved audiences. But you can also see a custom audience was made to retarget those who had seen our ads. That's kind of what I mentioned earlier. And so once you click through to create a saved audience, you may notice a lot going on here. You'll need to name your audience, and you can specify different characteristics, demographic information, and what we're going to work on today with is location specifics. So if highlighted away, you can input a small number of values, but we want to do a bulk example for this demonstration, so I've highlighted that as well. And the column on the right, if you see under there the potential audience and whatnot, that will update in real time as you add information and details about your audience and its size. So when you go to add bulk locations, we'll use zip codes or postal codes as they call them for examples. You'll notice some other things that you can segment by, like country, state, or region, DMA, which is a marketing area term, city, zip, which we'll be using, or an actual address. You can't get exactly the address, but you can get a radius around an actual address. And back to known zips. I chose postal codes for this example, but it would work similarly for other location types. So if you had like a spreadsheet, we got it from our GIS CoPI. If you had a bunch of different information addresses, you could put them in here too. But once you copy and paste and or import, however you import your zip codes or your values, you'll want to verify that it was successful before adding the locations. Copy and paste usually works just fine, but it does require some human verification to make sure that everything worked right. And you'll see if everything worked right, you should see all of your zip codes in with a little check mark that they're populated correctly. You'll see a representation of it on the map. For this example, these are all zip codes around Athens, Georgia, and the University of Georgia, which is where we are today. As I mentioned before, it's a good method for broad areas like zip codes to select people in a location or who live in a location, but you could also select just people in. Before you finish, just make sure that the map looks correct. And that's it. After you save the audience, you have a highly refined 100% SnapEd eligible audience based on that geo-targeted the zip code information. You'll see here a few details shared about the audience, like its size. This audience has 16,000 people in it. And if you further refine any characteristics, you can see you can do that here too. I've selected for a few things for this example, like people who are interested in nutrition, and I've excluded upper incomes. This isn't necessary for geo-targeting, but it is a best practice, especially if we have SnapEd people listening in the audience, because it helps get your messages to the right people, stretches your promotion dollars by avoiding people who may live in that eligible zip code that may clearly not be eligible. So bonus, some free ways to geo-target on Facebook. Many of you are probably thinking, but this is great, but I don't have a budget to promote messages. So I have some good news. Paid promotions give you the best refinement. They put you in front of people and give you more reporting tools than normal. But it's not the only way to utilize geotargeting on Facebook. So in the interest of time, again, we won't go through each of these step by step because they're much the same as how paid posts work, but I'll just point out a couple of good free options for everyone. So the preferred page audience. This is free. It helps you reach more of your target audience just every day with everything that you do on Facebook. It doesn't restrict exclusively and doesn't promote at all, like you would get with a paid option, but it does increase the likelihood that your intended audience is the one you reach with your posts. Really, everyone should probably be doing this by default if you're not already. So if you're following along at your desk, make sure you're in your page's manager view, click settings, and then preferred paid page audience is highlighted here. And you can kind of see I've already done this with all of the eligible zip codes in Georgia there. There's an estimated audience of 1.5 million people. Another option is to do post targeting. You can see I've highlighted, it looks like a little arrow on the back screen there of a post that I put up before it put in this interface for the tools. It's not as robust as the targeting features on a paid post, but this can work too. It's really good for excluding things as well. For example, you know, a SnapEd implementing agency could exclude audiences outside of a state that they're operating in. And as with ads, your reach may extend beyond the target area organically if somebody shares with a friend that lives outside of your targeted area, but newsfeed distribution will be optimized and filtered to just reach the targeted locations, geo-targeted locations. Okay, so the next platform we'll talk about is Google Ads, and hopefully everything has made sense so far and you are learning skills that may be useful for nutrition education outreach and social marketing where you are. Next, we're going to talk a little bit about AdWords, which also includes YouTube videos. So again, some sample executions from our Food Talk curriculum social marketing campaign. These images on the left show the subtle differences of how videos would look on a website versus in YouTube when they're promoted. The screen captures are from two different videos that perform well. We have a video on milk buying and bread buying tips. And then you can see the video there. We have a short supercut from our bread buying video on the right, which highlights things on the nutrition label to look for and to avoid when buying bread. Now, a quick note on this. Google will be rolling out a new interface for AdWords soon. So if you download these slides and try to do this yourself in a few weeks or months, this interface will look significantly different, but the principles will remain the same. You can still use the same interface at this time, but it will be phased out eventually. And Google Ad builds are a bit more complicated than Facebook, and it may be harder for people to follow along as less people have AdWords accounts than have Facebook accounts. So for the sake of time, we'll cut to the chase. What you're looking at here is the main campaign dashboard in AdWords, which features a campaign of videos promoted on YouTube and one of our regular campaigns, which features text and image-based ads. It also runs a couple of what are called dynamically generated ads made automatically from images on our website. These figures reflect performance of our campaign during the month of May last year, so May 2017, but have spending totals redacted. You may notice a few things like impressions. interactions and campaign status. So you can see in May we had 57,000, almost 58,000 impressions from our campaigns, almost 12,000 interactions. Our interaction rate for videos was really good. It was almost 24%. As you can see, the video campaign reached more people and had a much higher interaction rate, but it was promoted with a higher budget than the regular campaign. In fact, that little limited by budget status that you see there means that our ad performed very well and YouTube wanted to serve it to more people than it did, but it was limited by budget. So as with the Facebook example, I'm going to go over how to modify an existing campaign to geo-target placement in the interest of time instead of showing how to start one from scratch. Again, as with the Facebook example, we're going to go over how to add bulk zip locations. For those of you who may be following along, make sure you are under the campaign view at the top of your screen. Then make sure you are under the setting section in the first bar there. Select location setting just below that, and then click add locations, all of which are highlighted in yellow on the screen that you see. And as with Facebook, AdWords will allow you to manually enter a few locations, but it's most powerful when uploading bulk data. You can add bulk locations through advanced search. And this may be starting to sound familiar, but as with Facebook, you can add more than just zips. I've highlighted radius targeting because that's another method by which we target our campaigns to radii around eligible site locations like WIC clinics. And GIS experts are really your friends for this kind of stuff. But similar kinds of information can also be found for free online from various government resources like the census. Again, you will want to verify that all locations uploaded correctly. And notice that much of the data shown is similar to that on Facebook. For example, reach, which is comparable to an audience size, but it's accessed, presented, and managed in a slightly different way. So click done and then save, and that's it. Ads and promoted videos will now be geo-targeted to specific real-world locations. And I'll just take a moment here to note that, as with Facebook, there are many ways to further narrow your segmentation. In addition to geo-targeting, I encourage everyone to explore ways to refine your campaigns to reach your intended audiences. Doing so will further ensure your promotion dollars are being used well and you're getting the right messages to the right people. So as with the Facebook example, narrowing by demographics, if that applies to you, or interests in nutrition or physical activity or some other kind of behavior. So to summarize, as you can see, there are many advantages to geo-targeting efforts online. This helps us ensure we reach 100% SnapEd eligible audiences as mandated by our program goals and helps us design and target evaluation efforts. It also helps us make the most of our advertising budgets by serving ads only to our intended audiences. We use geographic information like addresses or zip codes to target our advertisements online, also in the real world, as you saw with billboards and radio. But it ensures that our promotion dollars are getting the right messages to the right people. It comes at no additional cost when you promote. Of course, there's a cost to promote, but it is free in some cases, like on Facebook. We didn't go over these in detail, but there are some additional considerations for geo-targeting in marketing. Certain types of internet masking technology can throw off geo-targeting. A very small amount of people may be shown your content who are outside of your target area if they are using a VPN that is inside your area. So a VPN is a virtual private network. Basically, if someone is hopping through another computer when they're getting online, to make it look like they're not accessing the internet from their computer, it could throw off this technique. It's a very small percentage of people. Conversely, a small amount of people may also be excluded from your content who are inside of your target area if they are using a VPN that is outside of your target area. So here in Georgia, if someone living in Georgia were using a VPN that was housed in, let's say, Wyoming, Facebook or Google wouldn't know to serve them the ad because when they went to visit Google or log into Facebook, it would look like they lived in Wyoming. And also ISPs route traffic different kinds of ways sometimes, which may confuse ad platforms if the targeting is relying solely on IP information. A while back, I was given a gift of a wireless router at home that had still had an old IP address from Chattanooga, which is my hometown, and it looked like I was logging into the internet from Chattanooga for a time. And just a final few specific considerations for our SnapEd people in the audience. Geotargeting online surveys for evaluations means that you can use the web to survey for interventions in the real world, which is very nice because I know evaluation is very important to us and as it is to I know everyone. Remarketing is even more powerful. We touched on that a bit earlier in the presentation, but haven't gone into it in great detail. But it's very helpful because you minimize the expense by surveying only the people who were exposed to your interventions if you want to. So only people who saw your promoted videos or posts or what have you do you spend money to try to reach out to again. And as the SnapEd members in the audience may appreciate the challenges of trying to parse the unique reach of our campaigns for annual reports like EARS, while this method does ensure that everyone reached in a target audience is SnapEd eligible, which makes it very easy to report on, reports still can't quite give a clear picture of just how many people get reached just because the management tools may estimate the target audience's size, but over time, from month to month on the reports, that you may reach the same people within Georgia more than once. So you can be confident that everyone you reached is SnapEd eligible. However, unless you are getting your report over a long span of time so that duplicates are removed, you just have to be careful that you're not overcounting people. So for some further reading here, you can follow these links that can teach you a little bit about the advertising on Facebook, or they even actually offer some courses to further develop some skills. Some questions that have come up during the review process. There is no fundamental difference between an ad that's created through the ads manager and a boosted post. They will result in a few differences for you and the user depending on which method you use, but not for what people see. Boosted posts don't quite have as much functionality as you get going through the ads manager, but it is a good way to keep content on your page for all to see. And it's also more difficult to target boosted posts on the fly unless you've already created a saved audience or select from a custom audience to target. Also note that we really only focused on how to segment Facebook audiences based on their geolocation today. We haven't touched upon building campaigns, ad sets, ads, specifying budgets, any of that complicated stuff. I'm not trying to discourage anyone from this if you're not already doing it, but just a word of caution that so that no one leaves this webinar today super excited to launch their first ad and then gets overwhelmed by the fact that there's more to the process. And today we focused on audience segmentation with geofencing on Google as well, but AdWords is even more complex than Facebook. You have to consider keywords. There's a lot more involved with bidding because there's other advertisers out there who want to reach the same people you're trying to target to. This is in part due to how vast the partner network is for Google and the fact that most of Facebook's ads are served just within Facebook. But without getting into a huge tangent, just trust me, it's more complicated even than Facebook. One question I got during the development process was if people were asking if they needed a Google account to see AdWords, like to see the ads, and you do not. Google's going to show you ads whether you want to see them or not, unless you have an ad blocker. But you do, however, need a Google account to set up ads in Google if that's what you'd like to do. The same goes for Facebook, though by and large, Facebook doesn't show a whole lot of ads to people who don't have Facebook accounts. So before we get to questions, I'd just like to thank you all who attended this webinar, and I'd also like to thank ASNA and the Social Marketing Committee for their feedback on this presentation, SNEB for the opportunity to be here with you today, and give special thanks to Lauren Toby at Oregon State University for facilitating the collaboration that made this possible. And with that, does anyone have any questions?
Thanks so much, Austin. So I'll be handling the questions. This is Liz Sanders. And if you have a question, please type it in the question box on the right of your screen. But first, let's start off with a question. I believe it is from Mary Lee. And she wonders if you have any thoughts about nutrition educational professionals' opportunities to work with marketing departments at universities to help with e-advertising or social media targeting.
Yeah, I can just talk from experience here at UGA a little bit, and I'm sure maybe Dr. Lee might want to comment on this as well. I know that I went through at Grady, we have a couple of different types of, you know, marketing advertising at UGA. There's the Terry College of Business, which does marketing. There is Grady, which is Communications College. There's, you know, some public health opportunities and professionals out there that would probably be good to work with this kind of stuff. Sometimes it's not necessarily their forte, because a lot of times people are more into product marketing than to, you know, social marketing or behavior change marketing, however you want to call it. So sometimes this is there's a little bit of a learning curve dealing with those types, but I think that there certainly is an opportunity to work with them. I hope that answers that question. I'm sure it'll probably just vary depending on the university as well.
Sounds good. Thank you, Austin. We also have a question from Cassandra Webb-Cole, and that is, what was the budget for this project, if you're able to give details on that?
Without having to look it up, I'm just trying to recall off the top of my head. I mean, just for the F&V alone, I want to say we promoted with like $5,000, and we reached we reached over half a million eligible Georgians in federal fiscal year 17. That was just one aspect of the that was just the online aspect of the campaign. We optimized our campaigns for unique reach. So you can optimize for a lot of different things. You could optimize for impressions or what they call frequency a lot of times online. It's also known as dosage in public health circles and education and some other places. But if you want somebody to see something, you know, three or more times, you can optimize for that. But you have a lot of control over how your money gets spent and where it goes. It does not take very much money at all to get a good return on investment if you're targeting right. You could easily take a couple $100 and reach a couple thousand unique individuals. And then you could take another $100 and evaluate on that if you wanted to do something very small just to get started.
Great. That's very helpful. And this kind of leads into the next question, which is from Sharon Sass, and that is, what is the length of the campaign for the FNV campaign?
FNV was highly focused and targeted during the summer. We ran it over a two-month span. It actually ended up stretching into about three, though, just because of how start and stop points went. Normally, you know, you run campaigns longer than that. You'd probably spend more, you'd probably saturate just a local place, but because we used such refined online measures to target these things, we were able to do a very short time frame, get really great data. We just got back our probably what will be our last delivery of our direct mail responses. We got 900 something out of 11,000 that we mailed out, so we had about close to a 10% response rate. And online we had a really great response rate as well for, it was less than $1,000 that we spent, and we got, I think it was over 200 responses back. So you get a lot of return for your money spent, when you do really good refinement on your targeting.
We have another question from Don Robinson, and this is something that I was wondering about during the presentation too. Do you have any special tips for dealing with mobile users? We know more and more people are using smartphones to access nutrition information, and I was wondering if this had any effect on how you target those mobile users, whether you typically target them through Facebook instead of Google.
Yeah, platform doesn't really make a huge difference. Google Ads, if you enable the partner network on either Facebook or Google, you're going to show up in people's apps, you're going to show up on websites, you're going to show up in all different kinds of places. The things that you have to consider as the nutrition educators or the promoters are usability in context for the end user. So, you know, if somebody's just scrolling past with their thumb on their news feed, is the content that I'm putting in front of them, is it too many words? Are they going to be able to read it? Are they going to be able to get the message in a few seconds? Like this one here, really cute, engaging. Like, whoa, that dog is eating a carrot. Wow, that's unusual. It says eat your veggies. I stopped for 3 seconds. I got eat your veggies out of that. He's eating vegetables. You know, when you just kind of have to consider how people are using this stuff and make sure that it fits and it works for your intention.
Great. And also, the second part of John's question, can you target by language? Did you do any Spanish language messages or targeting?
You can. We did not this year. That is in the plan for next year.
Great. So another question, and this came from Zach Gregory. What were common key performance indicators for your campaign?
A few different things. Like you saw on the YouTube performance. I mean, engagement rates are one of those process evaluation indicators that we use. We compared and contrasted using the FMV campaign to our regular curriculum-rooted campaign to see if they're that's what we're doing right now for our annual report. We're analyzing which one, if it was more popular, got more engagement, if it reached more people. These platforms, they will charge you less and show your promoted posts to more people if people like it. So already hard-baked in process evaluation, like it. They'll tell you if it's popular or not. So that's pretty cool. Another way that we evaluate is with those surveys. So we have several different indicators we evaluate for, including intention to change, and then also just kind of how people received the content or what they thought about it more generally. And that we're still analyzing. I mean, we just got our last, I think will be our last return of letters from our mailhouse that handled all the business reply stuff. So we're inputting all that data now to evaluate what people thought about it versus just like observing how they interacted with it and how it performed that way.
Great. So we have a question from Jennifer Bell. With Google Ads, can you set parameters around what websites your ad will appear on as to avoid ads appearing on inappropriate or undesirable web pages?
Yeah, you've touched on like the million-dollar or the billion-dollar issue, rather. Google is taking that very seriously, given recent events over the course of the past year or maybe a little bit more. At present, I have not had an opportunity to refine based on that. I know that that is a concern for these companies and that they're working on ways to do that. But you could always exclude things. So if you have particular terms or what have you that you don't want to necessarily be associated with, you could exclude stuff. But at present, no, I'm not aware of any ability to you know, basically pick and choose where you appear. You could always turn off the partner network also. And so if you just wanted to be on Facebook, you know, you just appear in a news feed or on the right side of a, you know, somebody's news feed or something like that.
Great. We also have a question from Caroline, which is, when promoting ads on Facebook, which is the part that you should focus on getting the most improvement? Should you focus on getting more page likes, more post reach, et cetera? What do you think is the most effective?
Yeah, so this will probably be a frustrating reply, but there is no like single answer to that question. You can optimize your campaign for whatever your goal is. So if your goal is, like we have online education. If people are listening, I'll just go ahead and plug it at foodtalk.org, www.foodtalk.org. There's some learn online stuff there so people can go through educational courses. So if we were trying to get people to complete the online education, we can use what's called, they have a Facebook pixel. It's a little tracking pixel that you can install in the header of your website if you work with, or you know, whatever your goal is. If you work with a webmaster, and when people visit your website from Facebook, it will know that. And then whatever you set as your behavior, it will let you know that's your conversion, that's your goal for that Facebook ad. So, like, if your goal is to get people to go and take your online learning, you can set that up with your promoted post. If your goal is to get more likes on your page because you want to have a bigger organic audience to just share without paying to, you know, you could optimize for page likes. Right now, from most figures, like Facebook doesn't publish this stuff, but it's about 5% of your audience that may get shown your stuff, your content. So, you know, you have to make a judgment call on whether or not that's worth it for you. I would say most of the time, though, optimizing for engagement, unique reach, which engagement being likes, comment, shares, or traffic to your website are going to be your best goals.
And would you say that because that really shows that people are interacting and responding to these messages?
Engagement, optimizing for engagement absolutely would show that people are interacting with and responding to your messages if it's content that is that they want to engage with, yes.
Definitely. And that leads us into maybe this could be our last question since I think we're only a couple minutes before the end of the hour. But are your online classes that you mentioned, are those that used in the WIC program as well? And that question comes from Sharon Sass.
Not presently, no. They're not compulsory in any way. They're just open to the public and often referred to by program assistants in the community. For people who may not be able to participate in all of our direct education classes, they can go and take it online if they're interested.
Great. Well, those are all the questions I have in the box. Oh, actually, wait, we have one more. This one comes from Shana Atkins, and this is, do you have any suggestions or resources that are best to review when planning a marketing or health promotion campaign to help make sure that cultural, ethnic, racial, geographical influences are properly addressed?
Man, I wish that there was like a simple checklist to go through for all of that. But, you know, humans are complicated creatures and our tastes are even more complicated. I mean, it's just like how there's not one sports drink, there's not one soda, there's not one car, there's not one shoe. No one size fits all exists for this stuff. And that's a real, real hard question to answer. That's why there are professionals and agencies and all kinds of different people that work on this stuff. So unfortunately, I don't have something I could just point you directly to. But I can say it helps to have probably conversations with a lot of different people that can bring a lot of different backgrounds and skill sets to the planning table when you're pulling that all together.
Great. Well, thank you all for your great questions. There were lots of really good, engaging, insightful questions.
Awesome.
I think I'll turn it over to Kayla.
Great. Thank you, Liz, and thank you to our speakers for sharing your research with us today. If there were any questions that we weren't allowed or we didn't have the time to get through, I will definitely make sure that I get those to our presenters and get the answers to our attendees. Just a reminder that when I close the session today, there will be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on that. Watch for an email on Thursday this week that will include the links for today's recording, the handouts, any questions we didn't get to, and the CEU certificate that you are earning for attending today's webinar. Be sure to register for our next webinar. That is Journal Club 8, and that takes place next Monday on November 20th. So that concludes today's session. Thank you all for joining us.